This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Women have long ruled the kitchen at home, but in the restaurant business, say the word chef and the image of a man is likely to pop into your head. That stereotype wasn't helped by the recent article in Time magazine, The Gods of Food. In it, they wrote about the people most influencing food in restaurants and even at your table at home, all men. But women have had significant influence in restaurants for years, particularly here in Charlotte. Women have been chefs and have been running restaurants around here, influencing what Charlotteans eat and perhaps more importantly, how they eat and regard food. We're going to talk to a few this hour. Fran Schiavelli transformed from being a white-collar criminal defense lawyer. I just can't picture you that way.
Really? Thanks, Mike.
Into a restaurateur. She opened Metropolitan Cafe in South Park in the 90s as owner-operator and chef and baker. And in 2009, after a stint with Dean and DeLuca in the Napa Valley, she opened Fran's Filling Station, not a gas station, a restaurant, on Park Road. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
Good to see you again. And Julie Luna Powell grew up in Bogota, Colombia, where her mother was a nutritionist. She learned to cook at 15, studied in Switzerland, and opened a vegetarian restaurant, Real Food Charlotte, in 2009, and followed that up in 2010 with Luna's Living Kitchen in Charlotte South End as a way to share healthy food with the community. Welcome to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
And also with us by phone for the first time ever to protect her anonymity is a woman who has been writing about food in and around town and contributing her opinions as a restaurant critic for more than 25 years, Helen Schwab from the Charlotte Observer. Should we put your voice through a filter to disguise it as well?
Ooh, I like that idea. Okay. No, I personally have no problem picturing Fran as an attorney.
Okay.
Thank you, Helen, I think.
All righty. How many goddesses of food have there been, are there now, present company included, in Charlotte, in the food business? Who wants to take that? Fran, Helen, you write about all these people. How many are there?
323.
Are there a good number? Let's not put a number on it because I'm sure you can't do that for real.
I think that part of the essence of this issue is that everybody knows there are some. Why aren't there more? And are there significant barriers to women succeeding as chefs and chef owners?
Because we've had a couple of nationally known food goddesses on this program. Alice Waters has been on the show, NPR's Lynn Rosetta Casper, several other women as well. Was Time Magazine's omission of women an oversight, or is it part of a deeper, more pervasive, snarkier problem?
Both.
Well, one thing I think that Martha Stewart said about the article was that it was cleverly designed to provoke a dialogue, and I think obviously that's happened. That's why we're here today.
I saw that quote. Do you think that's really true?
I think it was great that she said it. I think it may be true.
Because everybody knows that magazines are in trouble. All printed publications are having a tough time. If you put an article that generates water cooler conversation, people go out and grab the article or at least go to your website and read it.
Well, you have to subscribe to read that particular article. So, I mean, it was very clever. And I think anything that doesn't include either Alice Waters or Martha Stewart, but I mean, especially, people may laugh at Martha Stewart, but I think she's hugely influential and very talented. Alice Waters, how could you not include her?
I think there's two other things going on. I mean, one, I think we're crediting Time magazine with way too much intelligence. They did it purposefully. If you read the interview with the editor, he sounded like an idiot. So I think there's no intent there. Marketing intent, or maybe his people did it, but I don't think he certainly did not come across as smart enough to have done that. I think the other issue is they didn't set out. I mean, the premise of this article was not let's pick the people who have been most influential over the past 50 years. I mean, if you don't put there's a multitude of people that would have been on that list, male and female, if that had been the premise, but it wasn't. It's a very, very moment thing. And so I think the omission of Alice Waters, while criminal, is much more criminal if you're thinking about it as from a historical perspective. And they didn't, you know, if you read it, they're not saying these are the most important people of all time.
Well, I would think, though, particularly the family tree part. Yes. You know, she's,
I was going to say that
she spawned so many great chefs.
I agree with that.
For people who did not read the article, The Family Tree, explain that.
Well, I mean, I'm getting myself in more than I actually remember, but I mean, there were, I forget, I know Thomas Keller was one. Help me out. There were two more, I believe.
Well, there was a pair, the Adrias, and then there were four. It was essentially a diagram or a graphic of four very influential, very influential chefs and the people they've influenced and how their thinking has shown up across the country and across the world because they stage at each other's restaurants and they share information. And that was really stupid not to include Alice Waters there.
Did this article surprise you, Juliana?
Well, I would say I kind of live in the environment where the male figure is always present on the kitchens. So then when I read it, I was thinking, well, it's not about gender. You know, for me, like kitchens, and they are more about really your skills and what you are bringing to the table. So I will try to kind of move a little bit about the gender, like if it is guys there, if it is girls running the kitchen. And I also come back to this feeling like we as a woman, we really nourish homes and we can't nourish community. So that's what we try to do with Lunas, and I see other incredible friends of mine that also own restaurants doing the same. They are bringing what they know how to do the best and also working with incredible project that is the project of sustainability. So when you kind of bring this to the table and thinking that, well, if I can be a mother and also do this so well at home, I can come and bring something here to the community. So I kind of try to move more from the gender side. You know, I really work with kitchens where the male is the structure and he is the one that say how to do it, and is really stressful to work around sometimes. I would say I work in kitchens that they were crazy. But when I came here, and then I have to be a leader, and I was surrounded by, I still foreign here, so, and I have to be surrounded with so much male figures. And I said, well, I'm going to put the touch of the female and the nourishment in everything that I'm going to do. And I tried to kind of pass this to them. I was a little bit conflict at the beginning. And then you can see how everything started to melt one to each other. And female and male work so well in the kitchen.
She's had better luck with this, evidently, than you, Fran, because I'll have you share some stories a little bit later on. But you have said, Fran, that you believe that it being a woman in the restaurant industry is harder today than ever before. Why?
I definitely think so. I've been doing this in Charlotte. I really cannot believe it's been 19 years. It's shocking to me. But, you know, I consider myself having a first career and a second career in Charlotte. I had sort of the metropolitan career from 1994 to 2004. And then I came back. In 2006, I started doing a little catering, but I opened my restaurant in 2009. And my first career, it seemed very easy to me to be successful, to attract good people, to have a kitchen that, while it certainly had stresses and strains, seemed more collegial. You know, it was a job. You hired people. We had great people. They came from New York. They came from everywhere. They knew how to do everything, very high skill level. They didn't demand an outrageous wage. Trust me, I had my issues, but it seemed much more peaceful and productive. Now I feel.
Does that have to do with the economy, though?
Well, I'm sure it had something to do with that, and I think it also has to do with Johnson & Wales. And from my perspective, you know, we have a lot of young people who were raised on Food Network and different TV shows, Top Chef, and they're really seeking out sort of a rock and roll Top Chef figure to respond to be mentored by, to learn by.
So all these food reality shows are changing the expectations of people coming into the industry. They want that adrenaline rush when they walk into a kitchen. They want somebody to throw hot pans at them.
Well, they want their own show.
That's gorgeous.
Of course they want their own show. Doesn't everyone?
Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously I can only speak to my experience, but my experience is, you know, I don't go around telling people, hey, you know, I had sort of the first modern American restaurant in Charlotte. I had the first artisan bakery. You know, that is not something I do. But, you know, I do have a history of starting things that haven't been done and being successful at them after quite a bit of hard work and struggle. But people don't know that about me. But I'm not a young man with tattoos all over myself who is serving you know, crispy pigs there. I'm just doing my thing.
But as a former criminal defense attorney, you must have had to be pretty tough with some of your clients and with some of the witnesses that you would bring into the courtroom. I mean, you're
it
a criminal defense.
It was white collar, Mike. It was white collar. I mean, I certainly have been called, you know, feisty in my day, but, you know, I think that, you know, anyone who has a point of view and is passionate about what they do, that's what drives me. I am passionate about the food. I am passionate about my customer. I think anybody who knows me well knows that. You know, I think I say in my, you know, what I wrote to you guys, my personality and my pride are very wrapped up in my food, and I just want people to get on board with that. And I find that more challenging now.
You've had two restaurants. Has it been tough for you?
I actually have only one restaurant.
Okay, but you've you changed the name of it or moved it?
Well, first we started a vegetarian restaurant that it was Real Food Charlotte, and then we moved to Luna's Living Kitchen that is all plant-based and organic restaurant. It's all 100% vegan, and we don't use any animal protein.
Okay.
So
has it been difficult for you? I mean, to start and keep it going?
Yeah, the first I was explaining that the first part was really hard because I was – the whole kitchen, it was more male, and the whole, for me, I always see like kitchens, like it's like a marriage, you know. You need to tell, when you work with a lot of guys, you need to tell them what you need directly. I was trying to be at this point more the negotiating part, doing like trying to negotiate with them, and guys want, just tell me what you need, and I do it, right?
So true.
So I was trying to come to the middle part, and then they just take over. So it didn't work. On the second generation, that is what I'm doing right now. I'm trying to be more directly and explain them what are my needs. But more than that, like this time, I would say that my big interest is my team members. You know, I'm really paying a lot of attention on what they need, and what are their skills? I would say that at Luna's, I don't have so many chefs. I have only one that is from Johnson & Wales. The rest of the team are gardeners, graphic designers. They work in different kind of art. And I try to bring these skills because what we are going to do here is to do art with the food. We plant fruit, vegetables, nuts, and seeds. Mm-hmm. So it's really challenging because you don't have so many sources, right?
Well, Fran has said that among men, when you hire men, there are chefs and there are cooks, for people mm-hmm. who don't know the lingo here. When you hire men to be cooks, they have a tremendous amount of respect and a lot of fear sometimes felt by those cooks who cook for male chefs, but not so much for female chefs. And you're a restaurateur, but also a chef.
Yes.
So is it difficult to make the men do what you want? Because if you act like, who's that guy on television that just curses everybody out?
Gordon Ramsay.
Okay, well, if you act like him, then are you taken as seriously? Are you feared? Or they just look at you as a you-know-what?
I'm pretty sure they'd walk out. I'm pretty sure they would. I think that I'm jealous of male chefs. Like, I'm so impressed by the sort of loyalty, dedication, adulation I've seen them engender in people working for me. You know, it would have been nice if the chef made them loyal to the restaurant instead of themselves. But it's something amazing. But I say I'm shorting myself if I'm not wearing a chef coat in the kitchen.
Mm. Fran, and that's part of the problem. Some women don't push themselves as chefs. Fran Ciabelli is the owner of Fran's Filling Station. Julia Luna Powell is the owner of Luna's Living Kitchen. And Helen Schwab joins us from the Charlotte Observer. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Pearl Vision, providing annual eye exams, eyewear, and accepting major insurance plans, including iMed Vision Insurance, 5330 South Boulevard. Details at pearlvisioncharlotte.com. And Diamond Springs, offering bottled water, coffee, and filtration services to the home or office. More information about Diamond Springs at diamondsprings.com. Well, forget sitting around the tree with the eggnog, listening to Uncle Harry tell his stories for the 16 zillionth time. None of that. There are holiday movies to be seen, plenty of them. Disney's got a couple out. They got Frozen. They've got Saving Mr. Banks, which is the story of how they made Mary Poppins. There's a new Coen Brothers film, one from Martin Scorsese. Of course, a Hobbit sequel. Lots of things. Some good, some bad. We'll find out which are which tomorrow. At 9, we get our trio of movie critics together right here on Charlotte Talks.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, U.S. negotiators are pushing to reach agreement on a major trade pact, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and a new deal with the EU. But many unions, environmentalists, and consumers are skeptical. Debate over new trade agreements.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and in our Spirit Square studio, Fran Schiavelli, restaurant owner and chef of Fran's Filling Station on Park Road. Juliana Luna Powell is the restaurant owner and chef at Luna's Living Kitchen in the South End. And Helen Schwab joins us by phone. She's a food writer and critic, longtime food writer and critic for the Charlotte Observer. Andrea on Facebook writes, "Do the guests think that the appearance of talented female chefs on shows like Top Chef, which has raised the profile of chefs in America in general, has changed anything in the industry, whether in Charlotte or more widely?" Helen.
Yes.
Helen.
Yes. And actually, I did some calling around to get some background for this, and I ended up talking to several women in Charlotte. One of them was Catherine Rabb, who has the gorgeous Fenwicks, who had Catherine's and who now teaches at Johnson & Wales. And one of the things she said is, you know, there are lots of women on television as chefs, and that it's interesting that we have, you know, that's certainly becoming more acceptable. The question then becomes, so why are we not? I talked to a major owner, restaurant owner in Charlotte, who said, "I'm trying to hire, and I've had 15 applicants for a chef position, and not a single woman. So what's the deal? Is it that they're not out there? Is it that they don't find out about openings? Is it that women, by nature of their wanting to have families, are reluctant to dive into an executive chef position that is likely 60, 80, 100 hours a week indefinitely, particularly for chef-owned or smaller idiosyncratic restaurants like Fran's? Your commitment to that kind of a restaurant is brutal and taxing and time-consuming. So why don't we have applicants in these jobs? I mean, we can discuss for a long time why they're not getting hired, but if we're not even having the applicants, what's going on there?
Well, let me tell you, I have a little story. And by the way, the women on Top Chef Masters are amazing, and they're an inspiration, especially older women like Susan Fenniger and Mary Sue Milliken. Like, when you watch them, they're amazing and inspirational. But, like, I had a woman reach out to me who was a Johnson & Wales graduate. I'd only met her through her part-time job in a cooking store. I didn't have any other experience of her. But she reached out to me after she had done a very, very high-powered internship. After she graduated, she said, "You're the only person in Charlotte I want to work for. I'm so excited. I can't wait to work for you." And I was so excited and flattered, and I hired her. And I think she gave her notice in 3 weeks. It was a Spanish-speaking kitchen. There were several people there. She felt extremely uncomfortable. But instead of coming to me, discussing it, working a solution out, whether she worked a different shift, I mean, she just quit. And that was such a turnoff to me, because life, work, it's all about perseverance. You're never going to have a great experience if you don't power through to the other side. I speak from experience, and it was really disappointing to me. And I don't know what she's doing now, but I would have nurtured her to the best of my ability.
So are you saying that is that an individual expectation that couldn't be met, or is that endemic of women in general? Is it endemic of a generation of people?
Well, I
coming
mean,
up?
I think I'd be
what
silly unless I said, you know, it's just her. But I do think the lack of perseverance is generational. I'm not seeing people stick it out, and you're never going to have that character building thing happen unless you stick it out. And Julie, you went to Switzerland. I'm sure it wasn't easy for you, but you stuck it out for, I think you said, 3 years. And that's something that's going on. But, I mean, I would eagerly, eagerly hire women. I rarely get applicants. And like I say, when I do, when it's hard, sometimes they don't stick it out.
You get applicants?
Yes. Actually, I get a lot of girls coming to Luna's. But I want to say that I'm kind of taking some of what Helen said. It's true that When we have girls coming to Luna's or in general to the restaurants, then, and especially that on the 24 to the 30s, you have so many things on your plate. So, and especially you are already married, you are like, okay, so I'm going to do my career as a restaurant, you know, entrepreneur, or I'm going to have a family, because we have so much things on our plate. We also have to nourish the home, and we also have to nourish the restaurant. So then how to balance that?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think Juliana has this incredible point that she said before, which was there are some really, and I think other industries are exactly the same in this. If we value what women can bring to this industry, and I think she's exactly right when she talked about nourishment, and these are gross generalizations. There are many men who bring a nourishing quality to restaurant food and to the restaurant experience. So let's just all agree that we're going to speak in broad generalities here, and please mm-hmm. don't call and say I'm a horrible sexist or a horrible feminist. Either way, the notion that if we value what women are capable of bringing to this, and we value that women are going to want to spend time with their families, then we have to shift some of the expectations to accommodate some of those women, not change it all and not make it impossible for women who want to work an 80-hour week and pour their heart and soul into a beautiful restaurant just like a guy would. That's legitimate. And if anything's getting in the way of that, we need to talk about that and figure out what that is. And I think some of the Time Magazine gists were the media doesn't cover women like it covers men. I think there's some truth to that. I think there's a notion of there's a good old boy network and chefs don't find out about openings, or investors don't want to invest with women because they're concerned about them leaving. And all of those things are factors. But if we value what women can bring to this industry, then there have to be some accommodations made. I talked to a young chef named Amy Kumpf yesterday, who's opened a place called the Flipside Cafe in Fort Mill. And I said to her, do you worry? I mean, I asked her, she's 28. Yeah, she says, I worry. You know, I know that my life is going to be 7 days a week, 14, 15 hours a day getting this restaurant off the ground. I care about it. It's what I want to do with my life right now. But I think about, if I want to have a family, how can that possibly work? And how can I make that work and be there for people? Catherine Rabb talked about it. Catherine Coulter, who has 300 East and who has a good record for having hired women chefs, or women who became chefs under her ownership, you know, can you work a way that women have days off? You know, can that happen? And certainly, again, for some men, that's really important too. But there do have to be some changes in the industry if we believe that we want to have women in the same possible roles as men. Does that make sense?
Hmm. How much of it has to do with what we just talked about, the hours that it takes and the fact that women have want to be nurturers in the home, even as they work in restaurants because that's their professional passion? How much of it is that? How much of it is the atmosphere in lots of kitchens where it is very macho, and where you talked about in Europe even, where you associated food with violence and stress from the kitchen point of view? How much of it is that women just don't want to be around that?
No. But
men thrive in that atmosphere.
Well, I will tell you, the first time that I got a job, it was in Geneva. And when I went to this kitchen, it was only 15 guys. And I opened the door. I was just coming from my internship. And they just looked at me like, this is not going to happen. Immediately, I feel like this kind of discrimination. And I feel challenged by then. I was like, I'm going to make it happen. And I did. You know, it was definitely an incredible experience. I cry a lot. It was several times that I'm like, I'm going back to Colombia. Forget it. I cannot do this. But I feel pushed. You know, I feel challenged.
Is that something that would you have found the same atmosphere in Colombia had you walked into a restaurant kitchen in Colombia?
Yeah, actually, I would say that, thanks God, my dad is not listening to me today. But my dad, he pushed me a lot to study business instead of being a chef. I always want to just be cooking all the time. I want to be in the kitchen, chopping onions, doing amazing things. And he said, please, study business, and then you do your career as a chef. Right now, I'm glad I did, because I can understand the business. I can understand the restaurant with numbers, because it's not only being a good cook or being a good chef; it's understand everything behind that.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. It's not fun with food; it's a business.
It's a business. It's like what you do at home. Like, home is also another little business, right? Mm-hmm. And then you need to understand what are your expenses, how much is your budget. So I did that, and I'm glad he pushed me to do that. So what I have in Switzerland was more the experience of working in a really stressful environment. Mm-hmm. However,
and I think sometimes what women who are thinking about going into that field think about is the artistry of it, and not so much the execution or the. And I think that's, you know, our fault for not. Mm-hmm. For not educating people, but it is just as important as an executive chef to be able to run the kitchen as it is to create beautiful food.
Absolutely.
It's a double job, and you better be able to bring it on both counts or you're not going to make it.
I want to get back to the media since we have Helen Schwab here, and you kind of alluded to this, but since male chefs seem to be getting the largest amount of the media's attention, as they did in Time magazine, is that an example of sexism in news coverage, or simply the news documenting the sexism that already exists?
Well, that was Time magazine's editor's position. You know, we're just here to hold up a mirror. But as Anita Lowe said in a really, you know, if you want to see some provocative stuff on the blog, and I think y'all have some of these links to the Time stuff. Some of it you can get without behind the paywall, without having to pay. Mm-hmm. And New York Times did a great debate and had different people talk about stuff.
Yeah.
And part of it is, I mean, as a member of the media, what I would say is there is an element of needing to say, okay, I'm writing about five chefs. I want to be sure one is a woman. Needing to say that because the first 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 that are known might not have a woman in that group. So if you want to be intentional about this, you've got to make that decision.
Was the media intentional about integration? Where the newspapers and television used to cover only white people, when integration began, were they intentional about including African American people?
Well, and I think.
And
I
should
think
the same thing be happening now?
What I was saying before, that if you believe that different segments of our population bring something to the table, then you have to be intentional about making sure that people are aware of those different things that people bring to the table.
Is the Observer, and would they be in your absence if your job was held by a man?
Would we still do that?
Yeah.
Sure.
How do you know?
Because I've looked into the future, Mike, the future in which... No. I know because I know my company, and my company cares a great deal about diversity and cares a great deal about what's right.
But I want to make sure that we're not saying that women are held to a different standard of execution.
Yeah.
I mean, if I hire a woman cook, a woman chef, whatever, I mean, I can like her, respect her, all those good things, but she needs to be as good on the hotline as she is making salads.
Exactly.
You know, and she wants to be, I'm sure.
I agree. Well, and another thing that somebody brought up, I mean, Amanda Cohen has written about this incessantly, really, and lots of people have talked about this, and part of what can happen is that women are more accustomed to getting the job done than promoting themselves, and this is not just in this industry, that men are more comfortable promoting themselves. So that can factor into media coverage. If you've got one chef who is making sure that he's emailing, hey, I've got this great new special stuff, or thinking about promotion, and someone else who is getting the job done head down, you know, part of that happens. And part of that is reflected in the coverage. So it's a factor. But I will say at the end of the day, I don't believe that the media, by and large, certainly there are some venues that are not trying to cover things in a unbiased way. But I would say generally, there are fewer women. And I think the media writing about women is because there are fewer of them. I'm more, and so I think the lack of coverage is perhaps more indicative of there are fewer of them. Where's the sexism if that's what we're talking about, or the job restrictions? Let's talk about those that lead to why there are fewer women.
And getting back to this thing where men toot their own horns louder, more frequently, longer perhaps than women, whether it's calling a reporter at the paper and saying, hey, look what I'm doing here, or whether it's getting on Twitter and tweeting about what they're doing to their followers. How much of it is that, or how much of it is that the media pays attention when a man says something? Because when a man's in the kitchen at a restaurant or running a restaurant, it's creative. But when a woman is in the kitchen at a restaurant or running a restaurant, it's domestic.
So you're quoting Alice Waters.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I think that's old school. I mean, I think that used to happen more. I don't think that happens now. I think that's reflective of Food Network and lots more recognition of what women are capable of doing. I think that is not the issue to me.
Okay. Therese, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one thing, which is I can tell you one thing for sure, which is that if I just try to explain something to one of my cooks, it's much more challenging. But if I'm actually working on the line with them side by side, at their pace, executing as well, that's the only thing that really gets the ultimate respect. Like that I do know what I'm doing. And they are more apt to listen because they say exactly the way I'm trying to get them to do it, that's how I'm doing it.
Right.
And I think Fran's hit it on the head that the culture in the kitchen is perhaps a little more like that than the culture in the media. That women are having to prove themselves more. Show me you can do it. I think that is true. I talked to someone else who was at a presentation where a young male chef was talking about his guys in the kitchen and his girls out front. Mm-hmm. And so this is someone in the 30 to 40 age range who was still thinking of his guys in the kitchen mm-hmm. and the girls are out front.
Well, that has been traditional, hasn't it? There's a yep. different culture in the front of the house and the back of the house.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it does tend to be more women in the front. I mean, although I would hire anybody. But one thing about having a woman owner, and I think Cooley can say this, is, you know, there is total equality between the kitchen and the front, at least in my restaurant. Like, the kitchen can't play with the servers. The servers can't abuse the kitchen. I mean, it's very equal, and you don't see that at a lot of restaurants.
Really? Yeah, and also what I'm just trying recently is I have, let's say if I have four guys in the kitchen, definitely one or two, they have to be a female. Because you just create this beautiful balance and respect from each other in the way that even guys communicate to each other is differently. At Luna's, we have an open kitchen, so we have to be real respectful. It's not pants moving around. It's not knives like going here and there. So, but I definitely feel that the female aspect there is super important.
Well, and you're talking about a very organic kind of way to change the culture. And I think what Huli's saying is that's really important, and that's the way change happens. That's the way change happens.
Given everything we've talked about, we only have a minute and a half left in this segment, but Teresa Montagna, who's a proprietor chef at a restaurant in Pasadena, California, says that female chefs are held back, harassed, and discouraged at every turn and don't necessarily have the tunnel vision needed to succeed as a superstar chef. Would you disagree with that?
Absolutely. I know I have tunnel vision, like absolutely. Nobody's business. I am obsessed. But I think it's more, you know, men are the traditional authority figures in the corporate world, and they're the, as I said, they're the more famous coaches. So if you're trying to be a leader of men, typically, it's challenging as a woman. You have to learn the right way.
Do you have that tunnel vision that she says is required?
Well, I would say, I don't know. I have been kind of really lucky with Lunas, and I feel that I want to take some of the part that you said, like you really need to wear the chef coat and put your hat, and when you are in business with them. You know, you are running your team, you are together, and I will show you how I want to run, and they definitely, this is how the respect start to grow. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think so that is the way for us to kind of be a leaders on the kitchen life.
Totally agree.
That's Juliana Luna Powell, who owns Luna's Living Kitchen in Southend. Fran Cibelli is here, owner of Friends Filling Station. And Helen Schwab joining us by phone from the Charlotte Observer. She's the food critic there and a longtime food writer as well. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 17 years, offering pet parents a strategy to achieve and maintain furry family vitality. AtriumAnimalHospital.com. And Trader Joe's offering ready-to-eat, ready-to-heat appetizers, fresh produce, and the basics, milk, eggs, flour, and butter to bake a holiday meal. Store locations at TraderJoe's.com. U.S. negotiators are pushing to reach agreement on a major trade pact, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and a new deal with the European Union. But many unions, environmentalists, and consumers are skeptical, and Diane Rehm will look into that in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. You want more food news? Check out our food blog, WFA Eats. This week, if you're stuck for holiday gift ideas, Amy Rogers has some special suggestions for local gifts from around town. Find out more, WFAEats.org, and we are coming right back.
As 2013 draws to a close, we want to thank you for listening to and supporting WFAE. Please make your tax-deductible investment now to support the programming you'll enjoy next year. Call now at 704-549-9000 or pledge online at WFAE.org and make your investment by midnight, December 31st, and you'll automatically be entered to win a Mac AirBook. No contribution is necessary to enter, but we hope that you'll support 90.7. Thank you.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about women in the restaurant business with Fran Cibelli and Juliana Luna Powell of Fran's Filling Station and Luna's Living Kitchen, and Helen Schwab of the Charlotte Observer. Fran, you have said that sometimes the men, and I want to get back just briefly about this behavioral element in the kitchen, but you said that sometimes men under your supervision simply refuse to hear you when you say something.
How can that be? I don't know how that could be. Yeah, I definitely feel that way. And I'm very thankful to have a brother in the restaurant business as well.
That's Frank, who owns a bunch of restaurants.
A bunch of restaurants. But it's very comforting to share stories with Frank and have him say, Fran, if I said that exact same thing in the exact same way, it wouldn't have gotten taken like that. I mean, I have a couple little quick things. One is I sit in my office, which is adjacent to the kitchen, and I can hear my cooks training a new person. And instead of saying, which I've begged them to say a million times, the spec is, or the way we do things here is, I hear, she likes this, she likes that, she wants it like this. And I think, oh, my God, you know, you're just setting me up for failure. Yeah. You know, it sounds awful. But
wouldn't the same thing be said about who's the guy that throws pots and pans again?
Gordon Ramsay. They would be excited beyond belief that Gordon was, you know, teaching them something. two things, I think. One is there are lots of men that it's easy to have a conversation with about work. You're saying, this is how I want it. It's an exchange of ideas. Hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? That's the beautiful ideal of what the kitchen is like. But there are other times when I say, I want it like this. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting it like that. Guess what? We have to go to the discussion stage. That's when it's a lot harder. It's very challenging because if you're not taken seriously as a chef, and again, I'll say if I'm not wearing a chef coat on a daily basis, I may be setting myself up for that. But trust me, I know what I've been doing. I've been doing this for a long time. And by the way, even if you think I don't, I'm paying you. You know, let's just put it like that. You know,
it seems to me that because you talked about earlier the lack of women applying, and you would hire them if you could find them, but they don't apply, and sometimes they don't stick around once they, because it's a tough business. It's the toughest business in the world, the restaurant business, yeah. It seems to me.
But let's be really careful that we don't say, wow, the reason we don't have women here is because it's a really tough business, because that's not true.
I don't think that's true either.
That's not true. And I think that is the gross generalization that happens that really hurts.
Okay.
Hey, you know why there's no more women? It's a really tough business. It's rough and tough. It's profane. We swear a lot in the kitchen. Little girls can't handle that. I mean, that's not true at all.
Okay.
And we need to be really careful we don't even sort of generalize. And I know you don't mean that, Mike, but I think that is the tenor of the conversation sometimes, that it's too tough for women, and that's just not true.
Well, let's go back to the fact that they're not applying to these restaurants, because we've already mentioned Johnson & Wales, and somebody's emailed us this morning to say, please don't forget the Art Institute of Charlotte has the only fine dining restaurant open to the public on a regular basis, and they have a program that seriously discourages behavior that creates chefs who think they are gods or kitchen owners with slaves working for them. As for female chefs, one of our graduates is doing a stellar job, Alyssa Gorlick, who is known to all of your speakers, and we have had female Art Institute graduates compete in primetime on Top Chef. Let's not forget,
while we're mentioning that, CPCC's culinary school.
CPCC is fantastic.
Strong people.
We have these three schools that are turning out highly trained, good people, male and female. And if the demographics are like those of the national demographic scene, women make up 47% of the student body of the Culinary Institute of America. That's up from less than a third in 2000. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that more than a fifth of our chefs or head cooks in this country are women. So are there more opportunities in Charlotte and the Charlotte food industry for women if women would apply?
Well, one thing
Pause a minute and remind everybody also, those numbers tend to include pastry. along with the culinary. And pastry is very heavily women.
Yeah, so I mean, I had a wonderful bakery for many years where we had a wonderful woman staff from CPCC mainly. But one thing I want to suggest is that maybe I'm not getting applicants because I'm a small independent restaurant. I'm imagining Compass gets a huge percentage of women.
Compass is a big food company that operates nationally.
I mean, they can offer things I can't offer, you know, so I think exactly. Right. So if people are looking for things a small independent like Cooley and I may not be able to offer health insurance if they're, you know, wanting to have a baby. I mean, they may be gravitating toward the larger food companies. But, I mean, apply. Women, apply. I'd be so happy to have you.
Yeah, and what I try to, what I found recently is I kind of do a little research what is the family structure of the girls when they come and apply to Lunas to understand more about their schedule, the flexibility, and how I can work with them and they can work with me. You know, and I will say I have right now two mothers that they work with Lunas. And it makes a little challenging. However, they are so good on the kitchen or they are so good what they do that I just play everything around. I know we kind of create the business based on them, but I try to make it happen. I try to make it like to create this balance that they can come and work and feel productive and sometimes even go out of home. You know, like they don't have to be all the time with the child. They just can go and kind of figure it out and come and work at Luna. So I try to play with their schedule so I can still incorporate it in the restaurant.
I want to ask a question at the risk of sounding like a sexist pig.
Can I just?
No, I mean, ask the question at the risk of sounding like a sexist pig. If you start, and this goes for any industry, not just the restaurant business. If you start making allowances for women because they want to be at home with their kids and you have to shift their schedules around and you're going to be very flexible in doing that, which is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. When the men start coming to you asking for the same things, what's going to happen?
Well, that was my point. Okay. I've made the most accommodation for my kitchen manager, who's a guy, whose wife had a baby this year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I like him very much. He's very talented. He's great to work with.
But
I've made every accommodation for him to be with his baby.
But at what point does it become just too difficult to manage if people can't be on a regular schedule?
Absolutely. The point where I said, no, you can't be 3 days a week anymore. You got to come back full time.
Okay. Well, and let's also talk about it. Rather than thinking about it as making allowances to accommodate someone, let's think about it. Creating a work environment that values different contributions.
Yeah.
And when Julie talks about, I've got two women whose talents I need to make this business the best it can be, it stops being an accommodation or an allowance and it becomes smart ownership.
Is it more difficult for women in Charlotte today who want to open restaurants to get financing, to strike deals with suppliers, with landlords, than it is for men? What has been your experience?
Well, I would say I have an incredible business partner, and he's a guy. So he takes care of this part. I take more of care of the operations and the work with the team members. So it has been really grateful to have him just taking part of that. So because he has more knowledge about like how to deal with the landlord and all the stuff. So I give him this part. I work more with the team and with the customers, and I'm the educator and passing all Luna's philosophy around, and he helped me with the other side. But definitely it has been helping a lot that he has more the knowledge to deal with that than me.
That's a place where I felt very respected by the business community in Charlotte. I think there are a lot of people who know, you know, I'm a lawyer by profession, and you know, I did this for a long time. I'm a serious person. You know, when you're an entrepreneur, it's always hard to get financing in this economy. I think whether you're a man and a woman, I don't think it makes a difference. But I've never felt less than taken very seriously by the business community in my endeavors.
Talk about mentoring, because one of the things we've talked about on other programs that have to deal with business is the importance of mentoring, and particularly how well some women seem to do it in other businesses where they've already gotten fairly high up the ladder, and they look down that ladder and help their fellow younger female people climbing to climb that ladder. Is that happening in the restaurant business?
I would love the opportunity to mentor more people, whether they're men or women. But if they're not there and listening, then you can't mentor them. Like, you have to first be taken seriously. Luna's business is a beautiful business. I think it's a sexy business. It's raw. It's vegan, vegetarian, organic. I mean, it's going to attract some really innovative minds. I'm sort of the more traditional restaurant with the hotline. It's a very classic setup. The hotline is, you know, the pinnacle of machismo. So, you know, I'm getting people in who you have to have a pretty healthy ego to think that you can, let's just say, tame that fire. You know, that's really what you're doing. You're controlling that. And, you know, there's a real skill to it and an art to it, and I admire it. I just want to participate in the food that's going out in my restaurant. You know, I didn't quit a very good job and put a lot of money in to have someone else's vision be the vision.
Right.
Now, if I met someone who I thought was amazing, and I do it all the time, and they understood the business side, it would be very easy for me to partner with someone or give up some control. I seek that, but it's very hard to find people who are both extremely skilled, care about the money side, understand sort of managing people. It's all just very challenging. Anyway, I sort of
We were talking about mentoring. Is that where the mentoring would go if you have the opportunity?
Absolutely. I would do it in a heartbeat. And the closest thing I have is the person I have right now. So I feel extremely grateful. And I said to him, how is it different working for me than for a man?
And, mm-hmm.
and? He said, first of all, I think I'm very highly educated. He is. So he's comfortable with that. But he said, respect is the baseline, and I can respect or a man or a woman equally.
Okay. You've said, Juli, that you like, you enjoy being a role model. Correct? Why? And to whom?
Yeah, well, I would say, going back to the mentor side too, and I feel that the first thing for me, it will be to be a role model and a mentor with my managers, so they can also pass this through to the team members. Because now when you start to be real busy, and in restaurants we always start to lose the contact with even with the customer, even with the team members. It's just sometimes not time. So being this important role model that people just follow their vision, you know, because at the bottom line, I don't want to follow me, you know, or I don't want to be like the superstar. What I want them to believe is in the philosophy and the vision that we have, what we are creating.
Mm-hmm.
That's what is the bottom line. It's not about me, because one day it will be not me, but it's still the restaurant is alive. You know, it's still the team members are putting amazing food, and now they are creating incredible dishes. So I always try, and I say over and over, is not right now, Lunas is not about me. It's about my team members and my coworkers. It's all about them, because now they can do it.
Which is just what a good teacher would say. Let me also mention that Catherine Rabb talked about they're discussing, she and other faculty at the culinary schools, do they want to do perhaps a chapter of something called womenchefs.org, which was started by great chef Anita Lowe and some other really significant women chefs, with that very thing in mind, mentoring young women and helping them navigate this industry.
The Alice Waters has said some things about the Time magazine article, obviously, but she says that the things that were important to her, cooking good food simply and using local farmers for the freshest ingredients, were not celebrated in the Time magazine list, and that if we, quote, celebrated food for what it should be celebrated for, women would just naturally rise to the top. Do women-owned restaurants and restaurants where women are in charge of the kitchen tend to pay more attention to that sort of thing, as opposed to being flamboyant and being known for having the best whatever it is? Doesn't matter whether it's healthy or not, just the best. Are women more concerned with the healthy aspects of the food? Or is that a gross generalization?
Well, I mean, I think there were two different things there. One is like experimentation for experimentation's sake only. Mm-hmm. Like when you design a menu, you really have to think about what your customer likes. But I mean, if I were just going to give them what I thought they wanted, then I wouldn't be expressing my own vision. I want to sort of take things that everyone's comfortable with and do my sort of interesting, or what I think is interesting or fresh or whatever spin on it. I want to introduce people to things like, say, I might make something like rillettes, which is like a potable pâté. And, you know, I try to hand sell it because I really like it and I'm excited about it. But, you know, I'm not trying to introduce like offal, things like that. I mean, a little at a time, you know, like chicken livers, things like that. But I think there are a lot of chefs, they're not really thinking about what people want. They're giving them what they want to give. And, I mean, that in a sense is true artistry, mm-hmm. but you're also trying to feed people in a really soulful way. So you can't just always be teaching them. You have to give them what they want, too.
Well, the other reality about Charlotte restaurant going is we continue to be a pretty hipster, trendy dining community.
And it's become that.
Our base likes the newest thing, the hottest thing, the weirdest thing for a while. And what Fran is trying to do and what Julia is trying to do are different from that.
Yeah,
I
know.
I don't think that's gender specific. I think that's a reality of what people want for a while in Charlotte. But the long running places are places that tend to be thinking about what their customers want and not boring them, but finding ways to keep themselves interested. And that's not gender specific either.
Juliana.
Yeah, and I would say yes, the health aspect is really important right now. All of us, we talk about health every single day, and if we have a headache, it's because our health, you know, we need probably to start to drink more water to just get out of this headache or like this migraine. So I would say food for me, and I always try to say it and pass this with my team members, is a source of energy. And if we take care of the first need, that is food, you know, the other dimensions in our life will be completely different. So I would say for me, providing sustainable and healthy food is part of the center of what we do, but it has to look beauty. It has to have beauty and be really artistic and attractive to the people.
Juliana Luna Powell is the owner and the chef at Luna's Living Kitchen. Fran Ciabelli is a restaurant owner and chef at Fran's Filling Station. Fran's is on Park Road. Luna's is in South End at the Atherton Mill. Is that right? And Helen Schwab is the food writer and critic. In absentia for anonymity's purposes from the Charlotte Observer. Thank you all for the